Thank you very much. I'd like to start today by giving you an overview of the family Blepharoceridae, and then I'll go into detail about the Eastern Nearctic Blepharocera Project, giving you information on collection, description, and the molecular studies of the eastern species. Blepharoceridae are commonly known as the net-winged midges. The immature stages are highly adapted for aquatic life, and they generally range in size from 3 millimeters to 15 millimeters in the larval, pupal, and adult life stages. Blepharoceridae is a cosmopolitan group. They occur on every continent except Antarctica, and there are currently approximately 320 described species within 28 described genera. Blepharoceras are also a monophyletic group, and for those of you who may not be familiar with this terminology, it means it contains the common ancestor and all its descendants based on synapomorphies. Unfortunately, the fossil record for Blepharoceras are poor. This is likely due to their life history, that the immature stages are aquatic and that the adults don't stray far from the natal stream. This is actually a fossilized Blepharocerid, one of few, in Burmese amber dating from approximately 100 million years ago. Blepharocerid larvae can be found on rocks in cool, clear, well-oxygenated mountain streams. They are unique in the presence of the cephalic division. It's a fused head, thorax, and first abdominal segment. They also have six ventral hydraulic suckers that aid in locomotion and attachment to the rocks. Pupae are streamlined and somewhat dorsoventrally flattened. They also have adhesive discs that permanently adhere them to the rock surface, and they tend to pupate in depressions on the rock. They actually orient themselves with the posterior end upstream, and this is important for pupil respiration. What happens here is you have water flow going around the pupil case, which forms vortices in front of and behind the respiratory lamellae. This aids in the uptake of oxygen into the plastron. These respiratory organs are also able to function outside of the water, so that aids in their survival if water levels fluctuate a lot. So if they're left high and dry, it's not going to be an issue. And this also helps in lab rearing, so we can gather rocks, bring them back to the lab, keep them cool, and actually rear adults. Adults are delicate, long-legged flies that resemble crane flies. The adults are unique in that the wings are fully hardened before emergence. This allows them to fly as soon as they pop out of the pupal case. As you can see from this picture, there's a series of creases on the wing. That gives the image of secondary venation. So this gives reasoning behind the common name net-winged midge. The adults are also sexually dimorphic. Males and females both have divided eyes, but females are the only ones with mandibles. They're predaceous, and they feed on other small insects, lacerating the insect and sucking up their body fluids. Males, however, are believed to be non-feeding or nectarivorous. The genus Blepharocera is one of the most speciose genera in the family. They have a whole Arctic distribution with approximately 46 species occurring. As you can see from this picture here, they have a high degree of morphological divergence. The Nearctic Blepharocera are divided into groups based on certain morphological characteristics. In the west, we have the Micheneri group, consisting of four species. The east has 17 species in the Tenupes group, which is what I'll be focusing on today. And then Austensackeni is another western species. It does not fit into the Micheneri group, so it's basically on its own. This map shows the current distribution of the eastern Nearctic species. What we're going to focus on today is what's kind of happening in the southern Appalachian region. So according to the Courtney revision in 2000, he mentions unplaced specimens that were found in the extreme southern Appalachians. And this is important because what this does is it extends the range of Blepharocerids further south than they were known before. These weren't identified, mainly from Little River Canyon, which is the dark blue, and Cloudland Canyon, which is the medium purple, and also Hillaby Creek, which is the light blue. Those were the locations that he mentioned. So we've collected from there, and I'll talk about those. All these locations represent additional specimens that have been collected, and of these, it represents approximately 5 new species. What we have going on here with these 3 locations is Blepharocera courtneyi. It's the most recently described species in the genus. Cumberland Gap, Conestoga River, Little River Canyon, as I mentioned, Hillaby Creek, Warrior River, and Cloudland Canyon all represent locations for the new species. These pictures show typical bluff habitats, mostly mountainous areas, waterfalls, and riffles. Water range sizes of rivers can range anywhere from a couple feet up to 100 feet or more. So habitat's very varied, but it's always fast flowing and cool. I'd like to take the next couple slides to show you some of the immature stages of the five new species that have occurred. Cloudland Canyon and Little River Canyon, we've actually been able to go there, collect rocks, and rear adults. So we have all life stages of these two groups, and we've reared adults from 2006, 2007, and 2008. Cumberland Gap was first discovered in 2007, so we have only reared material from 2008. And Conestoga River, we only know that from the larval stage. So we're currently waiting for the spring or the winter season, which is basically going to be January through April, to go back and get additional specimens, which we hope to rear. Hillaby Creek and Warrior Creek, this represents an interesting case we have. These two are considered identical molecularly. However, there are minute morphological differences that may result in morphotypes. Additional studies need to be done on these two, which will include making whole animal slides of larvae and pupae, larvae, pupae, and adults, and taking SEM of pupal dorsal papillae. Molecular methods, we do DNA extractions and amplification with PCR. Those PCR products are then electrophoresed and purified, and then we do a sequencing reaction. Those products are sequenced in our lab with our base station, and data output from that is placed into Sequencher, where we can edit our sequence and actually group together complementary strands. ClustLX is used for alignment, and finally we use Palpin McLade for phylogenetic analyses, building trees, and then looking at character evolution on those trees. Phylogenetic analyses are going to be based on morphological and nucleotide sequences. Basically, what we have right now are two separate trees. Eventually, these trees will be combined, but that has not been completed yet. This is basically preliminary data. As I said before, we use PALP using parsimony, and we use a heuristic search due to the size of our database. Bootstrap, Bremer support, and partition branch support will also be done, but those aren't presented today. So here we have our two trees side by side. We have morphological occurring on the left and molecular occurring on the right. The Tenupes group appears in red, Western Nearctic species occur in orange, and then our outgroups are in black. One thing to note on this tree, that Chattooga and Tenupes, which are present in the morphological tree, are not present in the molecular tree. The reasoning behind that is we have plenty of Tenupes and Chattooga specimens, just nothing that's molecularly viable. These are the five new species that are included in the molecular tree. The Hillaby Warrior species complex, possibly, Little River Canyon, Cloudland Canyon, Cumberland Gap, and Conestoga. We do have differences in the tree, and this is represented here by divisions within the Cowete, Hispida, Gelida, and Magna, which are grouped together morphologically but separate molecularly. We also see division here, especially with separated capitata. These are the two blepharocerid larvae that have dorsal humps, basically, and so they're very distinct. They group separately morphologically, but they're identical molecularly. We have probably 7 to 10 different locations that have representatives that look like separated capitata, so this is going to be a huge species complex that's going to be very interesting to decipher. With all those differences, we also have similarities. Williamsi and Caudata are similar, and they group together molecularly and morphologically. This is highly supported by bootstrap values, as well as Corniculata tuberosa. I'd like to end today with my implications for what this research can do. I'm really interested in using this for DNA fingerprinting. I think that that's really going to help us differentiate between first and second instar larvae in females. Morphologically, they can be really difficult to decipher between first, second instars, between species, and then female, it's in some internal characters that are difficult to see. I'd also like to be able to use it to associate all life stages and also confirm and elucidate those species complexes. So with that, I'd like to thank my major professor, Dr. Kevin Moulton, and the rest of my committee, and thank you very much.
We have time for questions.
Brian? I'm using a big zinc finger, and I'm also looking forward to doing some mitochondrial work as well, but that's to come. Mm-hmm. Yep. I've tried some other ones, but that's the one that's working the best right now. So there will be more of those as well, but so far, yep. Preliminary.
So I've got a question or observation. Uh-huh. I noticed
yes.
that many of your collections are in areas that are really environmentally damaged in many cases by coal mining, for example. Have you
yes.
got a conservation issue associated with this program?
No, not yet, but that is interesting. That would be something to add to the future if we find something that's in an area to try to get it protected. And I've not had that experience in the East yet. I know that there's a lot of coal mining, as you say. I've had more experiences with land use issues in the West with my collecting abilities. But I have yet to experience it in the East, but yes, it does occur, and that is something we'll have to look into. Yes.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.